Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean.
Hi guys, I hope you can hear me. I'm sitting in a coffee shop and I feel a little bit nervous about recording this intro in a public space. It's like opening up my diary for people to see. But today we're sitting down with Justin Zucker. And if you are a current or former teacher, you will relate to this conversation and enjoy it on another level. I was so grateful to be able to talk about teaching again, which I haven't done in a long time. Those of you who are new here, I used to be a high school teacher, and I was for 4 or 5 years, and I ended up having to step away. My very first podcast episode is an explanation of why I knew that it was time for me to leave teaching. So if you haven't listened to that, but that would be up your alley, go all the way back to the first episode, but don't judge. There's no intro, obviously. There's no outro. I was still figuring out sound. Things have some grace. Anyway, I was grateful to talk about teaching again and also talk about the liberation and growth that comes from stepping away, whether that's for a new career path like me or through a break and a sabbatical like what Jessie is doing. So Jessie is on her second year of her sabbatical from her middle school classroom that she left due to high stress and a need to focus on her health. During her time away, she's been traveling all the way to Europe and Hawaii and hiking and exploring America. Is just incredible to watch. So much fun. Taking care of her mental health, leaning into personal development, and getting back into touch with her desires outside of what society deems to be the, quote, right path. We talk about her time in the classroom, what she's learned while traveling, how she affords it, what her plans are for the future, and the advice that she has for teachers who might be feeling burnt out in the classroom, but also curious about what else might be out there. There's lots of giggles, lots of relatability. Jessie is freaking cool, and I know you'll enjoy and want to follow her immediately if you don't already. SB, like South Bay Beach Teach on Instagram. Enjoy!
I should definitely ask how you're doing after COVID.
I guess the second time is historically worse because so many people like DM'd me and they were like, oh yeah, second time, way worse. And I was like, what the, like, I just feel like I've had this once before. This is no big deal. I was like, you know, when you have that sniffly sensation to the point where like your eyes just are watering, it was like that for about 6 straight days. Like I couldn't read. I couldn't watch TV. So like subtly annoying. All day, like having a sneeze sensation all day.
Yeah, it was horrible. My friend actually, she got me an Audible credit because she was like, since you can't watch TV or read, you can listen to a book. So
kind.
Yeah. So I think I got like 4 or 5 chapters into Fourth Wing, and then I didn't get to the spice yet.
No. I didn't read Fourth Wing.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a fantasy person. I did read the ACOTAR series. So my face was, are you a fantasy girl?
So I would say probably not really, unless it's like Sarah J. Maas smut. Like
fairy porn.
Yes. I want fairy porn. That's all I want. Have you read Crescent City?
No. Like I only read, no, this is like not my style. I only read ACOTAR because it was so poppin'. I read it in like the later end of 2020.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was actually in the thick of COVID. And I
I don't know. It was good-ish, but the smut, like, smut romance of any kind, I just try to avoid because I just read it and I'm like, this is so cringy. This would not get me going.
Oh, I don't. This, I mean, to me,
it gets you going.
It was, I would say, yeah, it reignited my love of reading.
Wait, how do we? Oh, COVID.
No, I was like, how do we get on this?
So when you talk about the second COVID being worse, yes. You're talking about, because there was, I had OG COVID, and then I, you know, like the OG COVID, and then there was,
oh, sure.
Then there was the COVID that was like a really bad cold.
Yeah. So I was expecting this to be that, just a really bad cold. But the other thing too is this. So when I got it the first time, I went in to like a CVS and like took a formal test or whatever. And I told the lady, I like started crying and I was like, I'm just feel like I can't breathe at night and I'm having so much anxiety. And she gave me the antiviral. So I feel like that's why my first bout of it wasn't as bad. But then this time I didn't do that. And so I don't know if that, I think obviously the first time, yeah, having that drug probably made a huge difference. But yeah, it's.
Well, what a wonderful segue, because from the outside looking in, I could be totally off. So correct me. Thank goodness you have the lifestyle and the job and the work that you are doing so that you could take time off to take care of yourself during COVID and not be worried about docked pay. I mean, docked pay in other ways, but, you know, still have more control over your life.
Yeah, that is one of the things that I am insanely grateful for, which I'm sure you can relate to as well. Like just having the time and the space and the control to do things. Whereas, you know, being a teacher for 9 years, that was a foreign concept, you know, even going to the bathroom, right? No one can cover my class. I guess I just have to hold it for another 2.5 hours. Just, yeah, little things like that that you don't think are a big deal. But then when you are living life on the other side, you're like, wow, it's so freeing to be able to do this. And then at the same time, I had no idea how much this was dictating just every single aspect of my life.
So before we get into that talk, which I could talk about all day, I haven't had like a former teacher, current teacher on my podcast in a long time. Why don't you just introduce yourself to us before we start, if you could? Okay. I know that's a lot of pressure. But
so I was like, hi, my name is Jessie. Basically, I am a 37-year-old teacher currently on year two of a sabbatical from teaching. I live in the South Bay, which is this like little beach community in Southern California, just outside of Los Angeles. Before I decided to take my leave, I had been a 7th and 8th grade language arts teacher for 9 years. Absolutely loved it. The kids are great. Everybody, as soon as you say middle school, they're like, ooh. And I'm like, no, those are my people. Like, they really, truly are. Like, I will defend them till the day I die. That is a group that needs more love and more teachers out there who do love the crap out of them. And that is me. So I have no regrets about teaching middle school. Like, it is seriously just such, I think, an important age. And it was an important age for me, especially, which is what motivated me to get into teaching in the first place, or I guess pursue that grade level specifically. It's really because I had an amazing 7th grade language arts teacher who I then ended up doing my student teaching with. Oh my gosh, it was like the full circle moment, getting to like go back, do my student teaching with her at my old middle school.
Wow.
I mean, gosh, just, you know, from an English major perspective, just you don't get any more romantic than that. Like, it felt very meant to be. So, yeah, I wanted to be that teacher that was just going to, you know, make things easier for kids in a time where things were really challenging for me when I was 13 and 14. So that was always my goal, you know, and it was, you know, I obviously have a love of English because that was my major in college. And I'm obviously an avid reader and creative writer.
which is why social media was such a seamless transition for me. I just think middle schoolers just have this bad rap, and I want to be the person that like does the rebrand for middle school if I can.
Good. I feel the same way teaching high school seniors. Everybody's all similar reaction. I'm like, no, they're the best. They just want to graduate and party. So they're like hanging out with you.
I would honestly love, I feel like when I would substitute teach, I loved my seniors just because it felt like, you know, you can definitely have real talk with middle schoolers to a degree, but like seniors are about to be adults. So I just feel like that would be so much like, hey, I can just have a normal conversation with you. I don't have to sugarcoat it. Like I can just be myself with you and you'll get it. So that would be, I think, a cool age to teach.
Those conversations were so important. And also being a teacher who's willing to have those real conversations with them and respect them in their opinions and whatever life experiences they're sharing, like those authentic conversations that other younger age teachers might be like, oh, is that appropriate? Is that crossing a boundary? That actually develops so much more respect and trust between teacher and student that... It was like its own classroom management system.
1,000 times over. That same approach for me too. Like so recently there's our school decided to eliminate detentions, I guess. And some people were upset about that. And I was like, you know, I could not tell you the last time I assigned a detention, because to me, if you ever got to the point where you felt like that was what you were going to do to solve a problem, that already signaled that you had lost the battle. Like, at no point was I ever assigning detentions. Now, sure, I might like send an email home, but my approach always was, let me take this kid out of the situation, maybe give him a couple minutes outside, and then I'm going to go sit down and have a conversation with them. Because I had that relationship with my kids. Like, there was never going to be a student in the class where I couldn't sit down with them one-on-one and be like, hey, what's going on? This doesn't seem like you. Something feels off. The whole behavior management thing, I just feel like people get so caught up in like, well, we have to have like strict boundaries and strict rules. And I'm like, no, you really just need to have relationships with your students and let them see that you are an actual real human being. And that takes care of everything.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to geek out for a little bit and then I need to change the subject. Because when I started teaching, because I did Teach for America, I never wanted to be a teacher. Did you do Teach for America?
My best friend did, and she still works for TFA. So that's why I was like,
I lasted 3 months in a middle school class. So I have a bad experience with middle schoolers. I loved them, but like I was 21.
So many of those situations, it's just like lose-lose. And they're, you know, coming from a place of, people are coming in and out. It's really hard.
Rough. But in Teach for America, like as soon as I got into that school, the teachers were like, don't smile until Christmas. And I talk about this a lot. We all hear this as teachers. And when I was training for Teach for America, it was always systems and procedures, structure. That's how you're going to get your classroom management. And I tried to do that over and over and over again. And it was just so inauthentic to my personality. And kids are like sharks. Like, they can smell out inauthenticity.
That is what I say all the time. I'm like, oh my gosh, they are like sharks. They can smell weakness. And I'm like,
They knew when I was walking in the classroom and I was trying to put on this hard facade, they knew that it wasn't real. And they would capitalize on that. Rightfully so. I would too. So then when I went to high school and started coming out of my shell and started being like, my quirky self and being silly and goofy and like that Misty loves you personality that everybody saw online, that's when I started getting their respect. And that's when I started having fun in class and they started having fun in class. And that's when I had no problems. And I was teaching all of the students that other teachers did not want to teach. And I had, I had some problems, but like no problems compared
to that. I deeply relate to that as well, because there were some students that I had that last year before I took my leave that I had specifically requested prior to the school year starting, because I was like, give these to me, because otherwise they are just going to butt heads, and I would like to be the person that like tries to be there for that student. So I think that's, you know, honestly, that is, it's the mark of a good teacher, but it's also the curse at the same time, because that has been from day one, my biggest struggle is finding that balance and, you know, how to separate, like have that work-life balance where you're not, you know, taking on all of these, like all of these kids, like they're your own. And it's just really, I've struggled with, you know, how not to care so much.
Oh my God. We are a match made in heaven. I would leave school so often and be like, I wish I could just not care. And then I would thrive. But then my students would be fail.
That's the biggest struggle. And I really, I like, you know, that is my biggest lament. And I would like chew it over with the kids, because they would, you know, because we had those relationships, and I'd be like, you know, they'd be like, Miss Super, like, are you gonna have kids someday? Like, you know, what do you think? And I was like, you know, honestly, guys, like, you guys are my kids right now. You are plenty. You have all of my focus and attention and love. And I just don't know how I would be able to give any more of myself than I am already giving every single day of the week. You know, and that was the thing too. Like when I did decide to take the leave of absence, I didn't want to tell any of my kids, like as we were leading up to the end of the school year, because that's emotional enough as it is. And I didn't want to then be like, oh, by the way, I'm like not coming back next year. So I didn't tell them. So then when I did post about it on social media, oh my God, like the emails I got from them, it just, I will like cry if I actually think, like, but they just were so supportive, so understanding. Oh yeah. I will never forget one line always stood out to me, and still I try and think about it to this day. And she said, it was a student I taught. Oh, buckle up. This was a student when I was a preschool teacher. I was her preschool teacher. And then And then she was in my eighth grade class. I got to read her name at graduation. Oh my God. I know, it was such a full circle moment. And one of the things she said in her email to me, she was like, I hope you can pour the same love, energy, and attention that you've given to your students for the past 9 years into yourself.
Oh my God. Eighth grade. This child is just profound. Wise beyond her years. Like it just, I need to like find that email and print it out, because yes. It was like,
just the fact that, you know, again, you have all these people just talking trash on middle schoolers, and that I'm like, look at what they are capable of. Look at what lurks underneath that like rowdy exterior. They are insightful. They are loving. They are kind. They're funny. It's just, I got 100% the validation and reassurance that I needed from my kids, that when I made that decision, it was the right one, purely because of how they reacted to it.
And they were able to respond that way because you gave them such a safe space to be themselves. Now, the real question is, tell us about your transition out of the classroom. Why? What was that decision? You went on sabbatical. You chose to extend your sabbatical as well.
So basically, let's see. So the decision to take the sabbatical, so it was a lot of different things. Feeling that, you know, burnout, struggling with the work-life balance, and, you know, feeling really emotionally depleted. I think there's actually a formal term for it. I think it was like empathy drain or something. It's something where like nurses or like first responders, it's empathy burnout or something.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a term that I was not familiar with until I took the leave of absence. And I was like, oh, that's for sure me. So I was feeling that way. And then I was also having these kind of minor but annoying health issues that were being triggered by stress. So I was having a really bad bout of GERD, where I was basically like vomiting like daily, like just like it's acid reflux, but really extreme version of it. And then I was also having vertigo spells.
Ooh.
And both doctors that I went to separately for that issue, you know, were like, okay, what's your job? what's your stress level like? And both doctors told me, you should probably look into a different line of work because this is just going to persist unless you find some way to manage your stress. So that was kind of the final reason why I decided to take the time off. I decided to extend the leave this year because now my husband and I have been married for over 5 years. Something that I have realized and come to terms with because of this leave of absence is the fact that I do want to have a family. And that was something that, you know, when my kids would ask me about that in the classroom, I had pretty much convinced myself that no, kids aren't in the cards for me. I have my students. Like, I just don't understand how I would be. I don't know how I would be able to teach while also, you know, raising a child, because I just didn't feel like I had anything left to give. This is actually something that I would say that I kind of came to a realization about probably on the beginning of this year. It was on one of my solo trips, which was very eye-opening because I guess I didn't really think that or consider, I didn't really think that I had done much solo travel previously, even though technically I did move overseas to Australia completely by myself back in 2010.
Wow.
And someone was like, wouldn't you say that's solo travel? And I was like, yeah, I guess that's true. Again, just me like, oh no, I haven't done that. Like, yeah, oh, I haven't done much of anything. But yeah, so while I was on that trip and I was just kind of like reflecting on like what I, you know, you just all sorts of stuff comes up when you're on solo trips. And I think I just realized that I had convinced myself I did not want it because I just could not conceive of doing that while I was teaching. And so having that time off, you know, showed me, well, yeah, obviously you want this. Like the only job I have ever had, aside from like a brief stint in retail, has been working with kids. And yet I had convinced myself that somehow, oh no, having children isn't for me. Like, I'll just be a teacher forever. Having this time off to really reflect on like wants and needs in life just made it so apparent to me that, yeah, you do want to have kids. You just had talked yourself into thinking you did not because it was like, I don't know, like a stress response or like a fight or flight thing or whatever. That's what the whole end game is of this second year. Which is a little awkward to like tell people like, well, that's all we're focusing on during year two of the
absence.
Right? Yeah. I'm like, great, cool. Like, love that I had to like come out and like tell my employer this.
You ended up being forced to take time off because of your health. Like, you had to.
Yeah. I mean, it was a choice. He was kind of like, yeah, why wouldn't I do this? You know, it was. I think the thing that was kind of like the final, I guess, the straw that broke the camel's back was the vertigo, because I had been living with those GERD symptoms conservatively for 5 or 6 years. And I just thought it was like my reality and was like, okay, this is just my life and I'm just going to have to deal with it. But then, you know, the vertigo is a little bit more insistent. I don't know if you've ever had vertigo, but like, you know, when vertigo happens, I don't even know how to describe it. Basically, it's like, yeah, you're sitting and then it's like the world yeah. And so that happens to me a couple times at school. And usually, you know, and it would come on kind of like towards the end of the day. It's just really easy to get, I guess, like overstimulated with like kids asking you, 5 kids asking you questions nonstop for like 8 hours, unsurprisingly, can, you know,
maybe a little bit of overstimulation.
Just a teens. I think to me, that was the most problematic health issue. It was more problematic than like, you know, vomiting nightly, because I was like, well, this isn't one that I can just like put blinders on and ignore. Since it happened at school a couple times, and then my empathy kings and queens would be like, give her some skills, like give her a swollen serotonin of the health. It was like they were very like
bulldog, like, we're gonna. And then I remember, like, too, I'd be like, I'm fine, like, I'll be back tomorrow. And they would be like, Miss Hooper, you take the day off and you rest. If I see you,
I love them.
Yeah, they were aggressively defensive of me.
That's a sign of a good teacher.
It was, you know, yeah, I didn't hate it. I was like, oh, my baby's taking care of me.
Yeah,
like, it was very sweet. I think to me, that was the thing that kind of made me go like, all right, like, yeah, you need to take the time. You unfortunately have to put yourself first, even though that is like the impossible for me. I have not had a vertigo spell. I struggle to even remember. I think it's basically been since that last year of teaching. So that would have been spring 2023. So it literally stopped as soon as I stopped teaching.
It is so sad how teachers are so quickly socialized into self-sacrifice and feeling like that is our only option and that is our life and like settling into that. And I was thinking about that when you were talking about, well, I'm throwing up every day, but that's fine. That's my normal. That's not a red flag that I might be too stressed out. But it was the vertigo in the classroom that did it. But then you later said, you've always been like this. Are you just like a stubborn person?
Well, I mean, if we're really getting into like unpacking this is like, I think that... This comes down 100%. This is a product of like childhood trauma, being that like anxious attachment style, people pleaser, being a child of divorced parents.
Oh wow.
You know, having a father who's an alcoholic, all sorts. These are for sure things like behaviors and traits that I have now realized are products of that. So it's, you know, but the unlearning that is involved in recognizing the issues and then trying to combat those. It's, I mean, gosh, over a year into this and I still like actively struggle with the people pleasing, to fearing like people are going to be mad at me. It's definitely something I've gotten better at, but it was just so pervasive in who I am as a person and then, you know, who I was or am as a teacher, that it was just, if I hadn't taken that time to think about it and reflect on it, I just feel like there are so many people who don't do that. And then that's just how they live their lives. And it's kind of terrifying for me to think about where I would be or how different life would look for me if I had been too chicken to take this time off.
Really. We talk more about that. The time off led to most of your realizations for how you behave, like the self-destructive behaviors that you have now, coming from childhood, and then being able to work on it. Can we talk more about that? Because I think people need to feel, especially teachers, who feel like they're trapped in this profession and they don't have the skills to do anything else, which is such a lie.
Yes.
And how important it is and how much growth you've gone through since leaving the classroom temporarily.
You know, I think it's one of those situations where, to be completely honest, it was not a decision that like I took lightly. And it was something that I had, you know, so much guilt and anxiety about doing. But I think really for me, all it took was seeing one person do it and come out on the other side okay. And for me, that was a girl. I don't know if you're mutual friends with her. It's somebody on Instagram. Her name is Haley Hendrickson. But again, very similar situation. Former middle school teacher, absolutely loved it, but decided to quit. And then I don't really know, even like, I guess to focus, she does like some fitness stuff. She does travel and all of that. But I remember when I first made my page, you know, I was still very much deep into teaching and saw her account and was like, huh, like, okay, this is a girl that I definitely relate to. Because I do think a lot of times, you know, when you see teachers that quit, they're like, I hate teaching, whatever, screw teaching, screw the kids.
But she was very different in that it was like, no, I loved teaching. I loved my babies. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. Like, let me follow along on her journey. She was the teacher. The advice she gave me 100% is why I ended up feeling safe taking the time off. She was like, okay, you know, if you're struggling with how to pivot out of this, start small. Like, look for ways that you can diversify your income stream. So then that way, before you take this leap, you're not just like diving into the deep end without water wings on, right? You have a plan in place, or you have, you know, an idea of what things could look like on the other side. So because of her, I started tutoring, and I did that for, I think, maybe like a year up until I decided to take my leave. And I still do that. That's one of my income sources. And that's also a way for me to like kind of like keep my toe in the teaching pool. And it's honestly the best part about teaching, the things that I never got to do, which is sit and work with kids one-on-one, which is what tutoring is. And so I'm like, this is great. Like, I still get to like have my kid interactions. I still get to teach. And it's like, you know, a really relaxing, self-paced, quiet environment. That ended up being a really good thing for me to kind of pivot into and start doing with like the social media side of things. I mean, I really can't sing enough praises about like the space of Instagram and what that ended up becoming for me, because obviously if I had not created that silly little account, I would not have found this girl who then made me feel safe taking the leave of absence. And then because of the leave of absence led to all of these other things in life. So man, Instagram, who'd have thought, right?
I love it over there. I was on TikTok. Like, that's, I was a teacher TikToker, and that was like very lucrative for a while. But then I was like, there's way more friendly community and ability to build community on Instagram. Like, I don't care about the follower counts. I care about the people that are in my DMs that care, that like, it's like having students that like send you nice messages about how you've inspired them. And I'm sure you get those all the time.
I was surprised how many people have like reached out to me, not just like teachers, but other people that have just like really wanted to like pick my brain about how I went about doing it, or people that have also struggled with like mental health. Again, it cracks me up, because to me, I'm just me. Like, I don't feel like I'm anybody special or like an expert on it by any means. But it has been really cool over the years to have those interactions with people. As teachers, we get a lot of joy and satisfaction out of doing things for others and like feeling like we're making a difference. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that being on social media, that would be a medium for me to do that. And the fact that it is just so not what my perception of the space was before I got into it, like at all.
When did you make your teacher Instagram?
It was spring 2021. And the reason why I started that was another teacher that I followed. You might follow her, the townie teacher.
She's actually one. This was just, like a girl I had followed for a long time on my personal account. And the reason why I started my account was because of something. She posted that she had paid off her student loans in like some sponsorship money. And I was like, you know, Jess, you should probably give this a try.
I love that for you. Thank you for just doing it. Because so many people would see someone, oh, I can't do that. Like, of course they can do that. They have all these followers. They're so pretty. They're so aesthetic. They know how to make these cute videos. Of course they're getting sponsorships that they can pay their student loans. I can't do that. But you were just like, I'm going to do that. That's a good idea. Let me start my Instagram account.
I had complete delusion. I was like, you know what? Why not? Let me try.
You know what? Some people call it delusion. Some people call it straight white man energy. And it can serve us regardless of what we call it.
Oh, I love that. I feel like that's honestly the energy that I ascribe to have more of in my life.
You said when talking about realizing once you left the classroom that you actually do want to have a family. And that's why you took the second year. You said that you realized that on a solo trip and that there is so much value in solo trips, because what I was getting from you was it sounds like a spiritual experience. Being on a solo trip, like you're alone with your thoughts, you're figuring it out on your own. Can you speak more on the value of solo trips in general and for you personally?
When I took these two solo trips recently in December of last year and January of this year, I think I was really selling myself short in that I had this mentality that I had never tried solo travel. And so I really wanted to give it a go because, you know, there are so many women on social media that do it and sing its praises. And I was like, these girls can do it. I can do this too. I think it is a really important reminder of just how capable we are, and coming out of a place of so much fear and guilt and anxiety about taking that time off. That was a really huge turning point in those feelings for me when I was on those solo trips, because it reminded me of all of the same feelings I had when I moved overseas to Australia. It was kind of like peeling back this mask of who I thought I had been, or how I thought I had been my most authentic self over, you know, the last however many years it had been since I had done solo travel. And it was just the confidence booster that I needed to kind of get back in touch with, what do I actually want in life? What do I hope to achieve? What do I want to accomplish? What is going to make me happy versus doing all of these things in life because I want to please blank person, or I think I want, you know, this is what life is supposed to look like because blank person told me so. And that was really so important for me in terms of realizing that I wanted to have a family, because if I hadn't felt like I was in a place where I was feeling confident in who I was, then I don't think I would have felt comfortable having that realization that I wanted that. So I needed to get to a place where I was feeling really good and confident in who I am. That's why I always talk about how moving to Australia was like one of the best decisions I made. I would say that's probably number one, and then taking this leave of absence is like a close second, but both of those situations led to solo travel. And I just think that the amount of reflection and introspection and insight that that provides you into what you really want in life is just absolutely invaluable. And again, it's an added layer of letting go of, you know, these fears that we have and then we just build up over the years and over time. And it's one of those things where it seems a lot scarier until you do it. And then, you know, once you go for it, you're like, oh, this is okay. I felt comfortable doing it because I saw other women doing it on social media. And I was like, yeah, if she can do that, I can do that too. The power of the solo traveling, I just, even if you take like a weekend getaway, before I did my bigger trip, which was going to the Big Island of Hawaii for a week, just doing my like little weekend getaway with my dog to Joshua Tree.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
Did you drug?
Just me and Spike. No. Definitely had some cocktails in the jacuzzi.
Okay.
Spike did some ayahuasca, though. He's rebellious like that.
Spike.
I know. That old devil. No, but it was just me and him in the desert. And it was like kind of like peeling back that first layer of what, you know, like, wow, I'd kind of forgotten how this feels. It's been so long. And then doing that second trip in Hawaii, which was for a longer period of time, that was like for a full week. That was really the one where I think I was like, huh, I'm starting to have all of these thoughts and feelings about having a family. And I came back and basically told my husband, I was like, so I feel like I am ready to actually start doing this. I got back from Hawaii, and then I think the next month I went off birth control. And so it's just been waiting to see what happens over the past couple months.
Doesn't it feel so reckless?
It does. Yes. But also, like, we were sold a pack of lies when we were younger, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you have sex, you will get pregnant and die. Like, one of my favorite Mean Girls quotes. And then you go to try and get pregnant, and it's like, oh, you can only get pregnant if, like, the moon is at, like, a half crescent on, like, the 8th Tuesday. I'm like, oh, this isn't just going to be, like, you blink and you're pregnant. No.
I'm sure you are learning so much more about your body and how your body works in a way that we also were never taught.
Nope, it's just like, go on birth control, you're 14, you have acne, whatever. And then I'm like, oh, cool, like, this is going to take some time to get out of my system because I've been taking it for 20 years.
Yes, there is definitely a detox period. It was really important to me to make sure to validate you and edify you in these choices because you are giving so much permission to so many women and so many types of women specifically. Whether they are teachers thinking about taking time off or thinking about leaving the classroom, women in any field who are thinking they might need to take care of themselves and their mental health. I mean, I know that I had to leave the classroom when Robbie sat me down and was like, you cannot be a mother to our child and a wife to me and continue this way. And you're giving permission to women who, how old are you?
37.
So you are giving permission to women who are in their 30s, who society has taught us, like, now this is your family life and you're just going to be stuck here forever. I mean, I had that. I was like 28. And I was like, okay, I'm pregnant now. Now I have a family. Now I'm stuck here forever. And I've never traveled. I've never gone to another country before. And that's just it. And that's not the truth at all. And you are showing that to people and giving them permission and being the person that you saw in the beginning.
Yeah.
Do it. I can have permission to do it as well.
It's wild that, you know, the way that you phrase it is 100% what I think women need to hear too, because it's just so deeply ingrained in us to, like, be the good girl. Be the girl that follows the rules. Be the girl that does everything right. And I think, too, an added layer of this for me was 100% like when things dissolved with my dad. Because when I look back on, you know, all of the decisions I made in life, like, yes, they were for me, but they were also because I was really trying to earn his love and appreciation. And to make all of those decisions and do all of these things for this person and play by the rules and still have it not matter was also just like the, well, you know what? I have been doing everything that I've supposed to have been doing in life, and here's where I am. So maybe let's try things a little different and see if that, you know, changes the end result. Truly, like, even though, God, I would not wish what I went through with my dad on anyone, I think that there is that added layer of fear for a lot of people when it comes to, like, disappointing loved ones, whether it's parents, grandparents, just basically anybody significant in your life. And I think that that just all that does is heightens the fear and the unwillingness to want to make those changes, because that's such a deep part of who we are in terms of, you know, how we're raised and how we, a lot of people receive love growing up, that I think that it's something that's really hard for people to shake.
Do you have siblings? Same.
Only child.
Same. Okay. So that makes this conversation a little bit different, but I think a benefit to being an only child, I think there are many. There are also a lot of, you know, being parentified, taking care of our parents with substance abuse issues. There's also the value of learning how to be alone at a young age.
Oh, yes.
And
having to entertain yourself.
Having to entertain yourself. And then as I continued to grow up, I was just very much okay with, like, sitting in silence alone in my room with my thoughts. and feeling my feelings and journaling out what was going through my head.
Yes, big journaler. I still keep one, although I have one from five on.
You are
I know.
Cool. You're so cute.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't realize how much of a gift this was until I left for college and my friend mm-hmm. went to a different college and called me crying-ish.
Yeah.
She had a brother and lots of friends and was always very active. And she called me and she's like, I'm here and I don't know what to do. Like, I'm all alone. And I was like, go travel around the city. Find out what's outside of your college town. Why don't you find a nature trail? Why don't you walk around the mall? Why don't you drive around and find all the cute coffee shops that you're going to be studying at? And she could not, because she was alone. She could not do anything alone. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the plight of so many people. There might be people listening who are so inspired by your story, who want to do what you have done, but have a fear of being alone. And we know that the biggest power is in your solo trips. I know we're good at being alone, but I am sure there were still some hardships when it came to making your traveling solo happen.
So I would say some things that I would recommend doing. One, if you do have a pet, I feel like that is a great hack. Because technically you are solo, you're the only human there. But if you can take a trip with your animal, I think that to me was a great comfort. And then also just like as an added layer, like if you, you know, are an anxious girly, like so many of us are, I was like, well, I have my fearless 20-pound guard dog to do absolutely nothing if shit were to go down. But you know what? He's here to give the illusion of, you know, protection. So I think that was really great for me. The other thing too, I think I made really interesting choices in terms of where I chose to do my solo trips. Joshua Tree, isolated house in the middle of the desert. Maybe not the best call in retrospect if you're finding that you're a little anxious about solo travel. And then same thing in Hawaii. Not really a space where a lot of solo people go. It was families and couples. And I had this like idea that I was just going to be this like very bohemian, cool woman, like at the bar, drinking Mai Tais, meeting like people, making friends. And, you know, I did end up making a couple like couple friends, and which was actually really safe space for me to like have some social interaction, because, you know, then the girl was always like, wow, you're here, you left your husband at home, great, like I would love to do, you know, it always ended up being this like fun little like Mai Tai fueled like conversation, mostly with the woman. But I mean, in retrospect, I probably could have gone to like any number of other cities and had a totally different experience, you know, where you would be meeting other solo travelers. You know, and then the other thing too is that in my old age, I had kind of like bypassed the fact that, you know, back when I was in my early 20s, I used to stay at hostels. So I'm like, I'm going to right? And I was like, oh, you fool. That's how you met people back in the day. But now that I'm a 37-year-old grandmother, I was like, I'm going to stay at this like she Airbnb or this like bougie hotel.
I mean, I think that's great. I would be in the same line of thinking. You can afford to have a nice big bed.
Yes, exactly. Like I'm not about to sleep in like a 12-person dormitory. That's just, yeah. I'm just past that point of life. But if you are like maybe, you know, a younger solo traveler, I used to love hostels. Hostels were great, you know, freaking place to sleep. I'm going to be buzzed anyway, so it's not like the mattress quality matters, and you know, just throw my stuff down and it's like $20 a night, like sign me up. There's so many things in place. There's just little things that you can do to make yourself have an easier time when it comes to solo travel. And the other thing too, gosh, I would just always say, just, you know, like always lie, you know, never tell anybody that you're there solo, especially if like guys see you're a solo girl at a bar. Always just have an alter ego in your back pocket, just, you know, ready to go. And I don't know, I think this is another thing too that maybe women struggle with, like, oh, I can't lie. I'm like, yes, you can, girl.
That's the most fun. a new name, a new persona, a new personality, a new career, a new childhood.
Be whoever you want.
Maybe that's just because we're English nerds. We're like, we could create a story.
I know. I'm like, oh, this is great. Like, yeah, let me just act out my own solo female like persona adventure.
When you decided to take your sabbatical, were you taking your sabbatical and you were like, I'm going to travel?
You know, yes, I hoped to travel, but I wouldn't say that that was the focal point. The focal point was, you know, number one, let me get these annoying health issues on track. And then because I had already started the social media account and I was tutoring, I was like, okay, well, now I have the ability to work remotely from wherever I'm going to travel. So last year when I was doing all of these trips, I was actually doing a lot of tutoring over Zoom, which to me was great because it was like, oh, this is like what I've always like really wanted to do. I can work from wherever. I can be on the trip. I can be doing the content creation. I can be doing the tutoring. And then when that's, you know, done, then I can just be in whatever space it is that I'm staying, experiencing it. So I wouldn't say it was 100% travel, but it was mostly travel was kind of like a byproduct of what I was already doing with social media. So it just kind of came with the territory.
I think that's so beautiful. I've loved following you. Now, actually, I know maybe it hasn't been recent, but this is what sticks out in my brain when I think of you is,
yeah,
there have been a lot of people that have given, maybe not given you pushback, but have asked about how on earth your husband lets you go on these trips without him.
Oh my gosh, that has been, and it's always, yeah, it's that, I wouldn't say I've gotten that in excess. Well, okay, actually quite a few. And it's not just been one or two of the comments came from guy friends randomly, okay. Which I was like, this is so interesting. And I think it's, they were coming at it from a place of their partner wouldn't feel comfortable if they did it. So how did I convince Mike to do this? And I was like, no convincing needed. This is just the person that I'm with. End of story. I will say that like on social media, it is interesting to see the amount of women that have, you know, varying responses to it. Like, oh, I would love to do that, but oh, my husband would be so sad if he couldn't come. Or a few have said, my husband would never let me. I'm like, oh, that's okay. Like, that's interesting. That's not my situation. And sorry and sad to hear that it's yours. It's such a foreign concept to me because I don't think, and I guess I have been in relationships with men over the years that I could see would have had that kind of response. But knowing who I am as a person and then who I've been with for over 10 years now, it's just such a wild idea to me that you would have to ask permission to do anything because you're your own person and they are too. Yeah, it's something I feel bad. I feel bad for women that are in that situation or maybe just don't even feel like, I don't know, like comfortable asking or get a weird vibe. I don't know. I really don't know. It's hard for me to relate to. Even though if I could see people that I've been with in the past having that reaction, but the fact that I guess I've just been completely and totally spoiled by Mike for the past decade has addled my brain, and I don't think I would ever put up with that in any future relationships ever.
Love Mike, but let me push this further just because I know other people will be asking, does he not feel fearful or nervous for you when you go on these solo trips and are in like a solo area like Joshua Tree staying alone? Does he not feel worried about you?
I mean, I would say he has like a normal amount of concern in that he would be on the same level with my mom where it'd be like, well, just, you know, let me know when you get from point A to point B. I mean, I guess that would be it. And, you know, we would communicate in the same way that we communicate, you know, when I'm home and he's at work. So it wasn't like he had anything like excessive demands or anything like that. I don't even know how to describe it. It was not even like a thing where I felt
there was no stigma. There was no like thing where I felt like nervous about telling him. I wouldn't say that he's just like, yeah, screw you, whatever. Like, I won't check in. But it's mostly just like coming from a place of very normal, healthy, I guess, rational concern.
Show me. You tell him, I think it would be really beneficial for me to take a week-long solo trip, just me, myself, and I, to Hawaii. And I think I'm going to plan that.
He would probably be like, oh, that sounds great, babe. I know you'll have an amazing time.
So many women listening right now are going to be like, what? And have daydreams about that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that would be all he would say. And then, you know, I think like in person, he'd probably be like, oh, I'm so jealous. Like, I wish I could come. But that would be it. It wouldn't be like an excessive thing that he brought up. He'd just make like a comment, or like if I like sent him pictures, he'd be like, wish I was there with you. Like just really normal stuff.
Now, does he not come with you because you need that solo time for yourself, or is it work?
We've done a kind of a mix. Last year, there was a time where we went and we pet sat for my friends that live in New York.
Oh.
And he oh yeah, I know. Gosh, I'm so spoiled. I have yeah. friends across the country, and they love hosting me, and it's great. And I love staying with them. So he came with me for that, and he worked remotely, and then I would like go out during the day. The solo trip in Hawaii, I think for that, I specifically just wanted to go by myself, and he, I think, purely just wanted to stay home. So it's kind of been like a mix. Like we, you know, I definitely travel by myself, with my girlfriends, with my mom. It's not like we have to travel with each other exclusively, which I like, because I feel like if I was tied to having to do that, then you would just be, you know, selling yourself short and missing out on so many different adventures and opportunities that, you know, if your partner can't go, you should still, and you can, like, my God, go, just do the trip, you know? Like, I feel like that is how so many people end up having these feelings of resentment in relationships, just because they're in a situation where, you know, maybe, you know, the timeline doesn't work out, or maybe their partner doesn't want to go where they want to go. And I just feel like if you live your life like that, you're going to wind up like being 50 or 60 years old and being like, you know what? Screw this person. I didn't get to do anything. And like, I mean, these are the people that get divorced, right? You know, because they feel like, oh, we got to just keep doing life the way we're supposed to do life. That rule and that mentality is serving literally no one. Like, once you can let that go, I feel like that's when your life actually begins. That's when you say, hey, if I want to go on a solo trip and my partner doesn't have the same response that Mike just had, like, hey, sounds great, babe, have a good time, then maybe I need to find a new partner. Maybe this person is not the person for me. I don't know. That's just my hot take.
I think that's delightful. I loved the passionate passion behind that. I'm going to ask the question that everybody's thinking. I ask all my friends how much money they make, and then once they tell me, I shout, pay transparency. So I want to know, and if you're willing to share, how are you affording these trips?
I will say that I had a pretty significant amount of money in savings prior to taking the time off, because obviously I am not making nearly what I was making monthly as a teacher. Not like teachers make that much to begin with. I had accumulated X dollar amounts in the bank to the point where I felt comfortable, you know, taking the time off and then doing X, Y, Z, you know, to kind of have some kind of income.
Where are the streams of income coming from? We know that you're tutoring. Is that fully funding these big trips?
I would say it's tutoring, and then it's also social media, which is obviously intermittent. And pretty inconsistent. And, you know, you'll have good months and you'll have bad months. But with those two combined, it's pretty easy for me to like break even in terms of bills and rent and stuff like that. And then with a lot of these trips, so not all of them, but quite a few of them, they do end up being gifted, because you're
going and working in exchange for content. That does help to make things a lot more cost effective. The Hawaii solo trip, I will say, was like way more of a splurge than I had anticipated. And honestly, is why I have not done another solo trip since then. Even though part of that was a hotel collaboration, having to rent the car and then get the Airbnb. Oh, it ended up being something probably where it was like $2,000 for a week. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is a lot of money for just me to be spending to go to Hawaii, where I could probably spend that and go to Europe, which is what I did this summer. The European adventure was amazing. So I will say, yeah, solo travel does come at a price. And so, I mean, that's why I fully think if if you're looking for a way to start small, just do a weekend getaway. Like, it does not, like, you do not have to go on a plane to Hawaii to get all the same insights that I happen to get there. You can do that just as easily an hour away, not like a cute little Airbnb to give the illusion of like being very far and on vacation. Don't feel like it has to be Hawaii.
What advice do you have after all of this for teachers that are listening, that are burnt out, that are crying on Sunday nights, who might have physical symptoms of an overwhelm of stress?
Take a look at your contract. Go to the section called leaves. And if you are able to take the time off, just do it. I understand that I was in a unique circumstance where I had accumulated X amount of money and felt comfortable taking the time financially. But if you are in that situation and you are able to take a leave, I cannot recommend it enough. It is something that I think I wish more teachers did. It's really invaluable. I know that this is time that I need to be more appreciative of while I'm living in it on the day to day, because I do find myself getting almost into that same like mentality of feeling rushed or overwhelmed or stressed. But that is my own lesson that I need to focus on and learn, because it's really freeing to know that you have total control over deciding to take the leave and then deciding how to utilize it. But with that freedom comes a lot of different feelings and emotions. And I think going in with both eyes open, just taking the leave period isn't going to fix things. It's taking the leave and then also showing up for yourself, putting in the time and effort and work to reflect on what you're struggling with and what you need and actually want. That is what's most invaluable about having this time. Look at your contracts, check your bank account, figure out a way to diversify your income streams, and realize that you can do it. I am no one special. I had so much anxiety and guilt about doing it, and yet here I am on the other side. I'm okay. You can do it and be okay too.
So without a doubt, if you have the option, take it, is what you're
saying. Take it. Yes, 1,000%. Yeah.
What does the future look like for you?
Obviously, I still haven't made my decision about whether I'm going back to teaching. It's not for any lack of love of teaching or my students. It's really just determining if that is the best call for me in terms of my physical and mental health. And then if that's the best call for my family, you know, if and when we do get pregnant, if that means going back to teaching and then finding that work-life balance that I've really been looking for because we have a kid, then amazing. But if it's not, then I would love it if I was able to continue doing what I'm doing on social media while also tutoring, because for me right now, that really is the best of both worlds. I still get to be a teacher, but then I also get to have the freedom and flexibility that I was missing while I was teaching, and then, you know, get to travel at the same time and be creative and all that fun stuff.
That one sounds like the dream. Well, I will be on the lookout for what your next move is over the next couple of months. With that being said, I have five fun questions, but the first one came off the top of my head while you were talking. This might be a little racy. I don't know if your mind is on my mind, but maybe you can guess. I heard the words, maybe it wasn't the best idea to go on a solo trip to this resort because it was all families and couples. But I did make a lot of friends, like at the bar with couples. Were you ever propositioned for a threesome?
No. But that is so funny. No, honestly, it was
the first thought I had.
That didn't even occur to me, but I got all of these, like, so it was basically two different couples on two different nights. And like one of them was a young couple, like probably around my age. And then they were just giving me like recommendation after recommendation. And then I, you know, eventually did tell them that I was there solo and then told them about the whole teaching sabbatical. And it was just like I love that. Oh, so that was one. And then the other was an older couple and they were like sauced, having a good time.
All they would be the ones to ask,
you know, and they it didn't get there, but they were very much, again, also coming like the woman just coming from a place of, oh, just, I'm so proud of you for life. it was both very innocent and just very cute and sweet. But yeah, no threesome propositions in Hawaii.
I don't know. Maybe neither have I, but my best friend has been on multiple vacations, not even alone, with her then boyfriend. And if he would like not be at the bar, she'd be getting a drink alone while he was like nursing a hangover. Yeah, it like happened without fail. Maybe it's
because
she's got big boobies and blonde hair and blue eyes, but
I'm like, what? What?
You have great tatas, actually. I do look at them a lot.
Thank you. I was going to say, I'm like, I feel like, and now I'm like, boy, maybe I'm just like living life wrong. Like if I'm not getting propositions for threesomes on these solo journeys.
You're not giving off a good vibe, apparently. We can fix that.
I'm giving off hard neutral, like teacher, like this girl just wants to be left alone and eat her pizza energy, yeah. Which I'm fine with.
If you could teach a class on any subject, not English, like you could create one up, what would it be and why?
I think that a lot of the skills that I use, or that we use, and you would relate to this, that we use in social media are things that I just did because they were fun when I was younger. And I think that it's something that a lot of my students also do, but they just don't think that it is like a marketable skill that could impact their, I don't know, job finding abilities. So I would love to teach some kind of class in how you can take, you know, photography, videography, or just all the little informal stuff you're doing on your phone and turn that into like translatable job skills. I don't know what it would be called. That would be the focus.
I think that's so valuable. People don't realize how many things they're doing on a day-to-day basis that are very transferable to a variety of job environments. What's one item you always pack, non-negotiable, when you're traveling? And are you an underwear overpacker?
100%. Oh. You never know when diarrhea might strike. You know, I don't want to be caught unprepared. So half the underwear drawer is coming with me. Same with socks. Because you know what? Nothing worse than like a wet sock. This feels like a silly answer, but it was the first one that came to mind. And I do absolutely bring these on every trip, regardless of what the weather is. I always bring some kind of like sandal, whether it's like a slide or my flip-flops, because I think I'm just so used to wearing those on a daily basis that I feel like if I didn't have them with me, I would feel naked. Even when we're talking like snow trips.
Yeah.
The Birks are coming because I want to wear them with my socks indoors.
They are comfort Birks.
Yes. My emotional support Birks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you had to design your dream like beach day playlist, because you spend a lot of time on beaches. We know you love the beach. What would be your top three must-have beach songs?
Ooh, songs? I'm like, I can give you artists.
Okay, yeah, that works.
So my favorite band is Lord Huron. They would definitely be on there. You've probably never heard of them. They're like big yet small. I don't even know how to describe their type of music. Like vibey folk music.
Okay. Ooh, I like that.
I was going to say, I feel like you would be into them.
Okay.
They're great. I've seen them a million times live. I'm like their biggest fan. So Lord Huron, Currumbin on there for the same reason. Again, like vibey. And that is a weird name to spell. Like, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Artist number three, my girl Kacey Musgraves, my weird queen. I'm obsessed with her. I think we would be best friends if we, you know, were involved in real life. I think she gets me and I get her.
A beautiful relationship from afar. And then the last question is, ooh, I'm between two. Do you enjoy watching pimple popping videos?
It's hilarious to me because this literally came up less than 24 hours ago with one of my students that I was tutoring. So this is so funny. Can't do the show, but am I a fan of popping pimples IRL? Absolutely. Like, oh my gosh, that is a clogged pore that needs to be liberated. And I will be that liberator for it.
Are you doing this on your husband?
Yes, I am. If he lets okay. me.
Oh, it. So it's.
He has to be in a mood. And yeah, I know. And, you know, sometimes, you know, because, you know, like all men, he can be a big baby when it comes to pain. And so, right. You know, so same thing with like, you know, maybe doing the occasional like eyebrow tweeze. And I'm like, just this new thing. I've done this for years. Yeah. If he's in a mood where he'll let me like, you know, get in there and pop a couple.
Yeah. Hey, that's a lot more than a lot of us other pimple liberators out there currently deal with. So bless him again.
Your husband will not allow it?
Not allow it. And will not do it for me if there's one that I can't reach but is painful. Will not.
Straight to jail. Come on.
Right? Yes, I agree. So my other question is, okay, you can't do the show. I haven't watched the show, but so then I'm assuming you also don't watch the Instagram reels.
Oh, gosh, no. No, and I do not want that to show up on my FYP.
You know, because also those are like medical.
Yeah.
Those are not like just a little pimple you're finding, you know, just on a little back. You know, those are like,
there's next level.
Yeah. There's like caves in there. Thank you for spending so much time with me. This was fun. You're dope as hell. This is great.
No, you are too, boo. I always had this like. I know we've been friends on here for a couple of years, but like, I just always was like, ah, she seems so fucking cool. Like, really?
The highest of compliments. Yes. So tell everybody where we can find you and follow
SB Beach Teach on Instagram. The SB stands for South Bay. So South Bay Beach Teacher, that's me.
Love it.
I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at woowoobestie_Susie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the woo-woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.